This kid's 7. What can change in his life if he is lifted to do amazing things? What can I do with this 13-year-old who truly is a pill to help her see the world better so she treats the world better?
Welcome to Artworks for Teachers. I'm your host, Susan Riley. I'm an educator, entrepreneur, and arts integration evangelist. Each week, we'll explore how teachers can crack the code of creativity and use it as a hidden advantage in and out of the classroom. You'll hear from authors, artists, and educators sharing their stories and their strategies for unlocking the power of curiosity and creativity. Let's get going. Hey, friend, and welcome back to another episode of Artworks for Teachers. I'm your host, Susan Riley, and this is part 2 of our interview with Carol Tomlinson. So if you missed part 1, go back to last week's episode where Carol and I were discussing the background of differentiated instruction. She shares her story of how she stumbled into this work, which is truly amazing. And then she gives a very mini masterclass on differentiated instruction, the philosophy, the practices, the tools, the things that we can use and actually make it happen in our classrooms. In this episode, part 2, we actually dig a little deeper into things that misconceptions around differentiation, things that that we can adjust and actually make happen in a world post-COVID, as well as her purpose and her passion after many, many years in this field. So I think that this episode is going to be just as informative and maybe even more inspiring than our last episode. So I can't wait for you to dig in. Let's continue the conversation. What are some common misconceptions around differentiated instruction that you wish would just like die? Because I know that I've got some around arts integration, and I know you've got to have some for differentiation.
Yeah, how long do we have? yes, there are endless number of them, but the interesting thing is they repeat across the country, across the world. It's human stuff. It's not really about differentiation. It's human stuff. But I tabled your question a few minutes ago about what to say when teachers say this takes too long. Yeah. Differentiation is a life changer for kids. It's a life changer for teachers. It's a way of teaching. I don't know that I've ever met anybody, I'm sure they're out there somewhere, but I don't know that I've ever met anybody who invested in differentiation that said this is a mistake. They begin to see what's happening and the trust that builds up in them. It's not that you don't have problems in a classroom, but they're a very different kind of thing happening, and they're more human ways to solve them than there were before, or address them anyway. So for me, here's my answer. If you want to be the best parent you can be, you don't come home from the hospital with that little thing in the blanket and put him to bed the first night and say, well, I'm a parent now, got it. you thought you may have learned something the first day, but by the second day it is not worth squat, and you're still doing that when the kid's 10 or 11, and when they hit adolescence, you're pretty sure you've never learned a thing, and they go away to college, and you think they've grown up, they don't need me, and they're the hottest mess they've been yet, and then they have children and need you again in a totally different kind of way. A commitment to parenting is a step-by-step, one day at a time, commitment to do the best that you can do, the best that we know how to do with kids. And that isn't the same thing for any two kids, exactly. And so if you have more than one of those little critters, learning that way all the time. So, so if you want to be a really good artist, you don't say, I think I might have a little talent. I think I'll take one lesson. And I didn't feel too good about what I was doing in there. I can't do that. No time. Or I'd love to be a really good cook or a really good singer or a really good golfer. But there's no way I can do any of that in my life. I have to just be a martyr and decide I can't do anything, but what it is I'm doing that I'm not loving too much right now. So to me, teaching should be hard. Teaching should be hard. Medicine should be hard. Those are two life-changing professions. And if they're not hard, something's wrong. So the other thing that's interesting to me, though, is every year we get these little guys that show up at the door and we say, we don't see because we know they'd run away. Okay, you're in here for algebra. I'm going to teach it to you, and if you don't know it tomorrow, might as well go home. We say to them all semester, all year, yes, it's hard. You can do hard things. Let's figure it out together. Let's keep looking for ways together to make this work. And we hope that by scaffolding that and encouraging them and making the support systems a presence in their lives, that they get to the year and say, end of the year and say, I really didn't think I could do this, but you showed me I could. I don't know why we say this is too hard or it takes too much time. I had a good friend who used to work with me some and had an analogy that I thought was great. She said, if you really want to lose weight, in case you had noticed, this is the truth. They don't tell you to eat all the food that you normally would have eaten for dinner and then eat the diet food. You replace something with something better. So if you have 30 minutes tonight that you can plan on something, don't go back to the old way. Spend the same 30 minutes working on something better for tomorrow. And that's kind of an interesting way I think about it, too. But when people say, teach, it's too hard. I'm sorry, teaching's supposed to be hard. If we went into it and thinking it wasn't going to be, if it was going to be a lark, I think we opened the wrong door there. But step by step, one step at a time, talking with our good the colleagues who are the best in the building at helping us be better. I watched us do that. I met with my colleagues for probably 18 of the 20 years, multiple times a week sometimes, but really almost weekly for 20 years, at least when people from other schools began to join us. And we knew we were better. I mean, there wasn't any doubt about that, but not a single one of us said we're there yet, and not a single one of us said it's hard, so let's quit. Yeah. It was that fascination of watching good things happen and feeling them inside ourselves, too. So that's one, it's too hard. Another one that I'd love to get rid of is, this is the one I think it just almost can't stay in the room with. I was in Texas many moons ago as the standardized test thing was starting, and teachers already were so focused in on that, and it was almost like a game you had to win to survive, a survivor game. And at a break one time, I noticed four teachers talking really animatedly, and I could tell it had something to do with school. So I went over and I said, you guys seem really into what you're talking about. Can you tell me what your topic is here? And one of them said, well, yeah, we just figured out what to do to make the standardized test results the best we can be. If we have kids in our class who are doing well, those kids are the definitelys. They're definitely going to do okay on the test anyhow. There's no point in doing anything else with them. They're going to be fine without us. We've got some no hopes. They're so far behind, there's really no hope for them. So we might as well leave those alone because their scores aren't going to come up enough to really help us. So we're going to work with the maybes and see if we can get enough of the maybes to move ahead. That I really thought I was going to have to leave that place before I did something really violent. But I think we tend to look at kids through those mirrors. These kids are not going to be successful. They just can't be. I mean, look where they came from. Look how much language they don't have. Look at the neighborhood they're in. Look at the attitude they bring. And then we look at bright kids and say, he doesn't need us. He's fine. He's already ahead. They don't need us for anything. We then give less work to the kids that we perceive are in trouble. And we teach down to them. And we say the kids at the top don't need us, and we leave them alone. And then we look at the kids and say, oh, these others, they're just average. They're not going to do any better. They're doing okay. They're making C's, a B occasionally. They're just average. And that habit that we have, again, is back to the mindset thing. And not really stopping to think, this kid's 7. What can change in his life if he is lifted to do amazing things? Can I do with this 13-year-old who truly is a pill to help her see the world better so she treats the world better? And so that notion of, I've seen this online even where somebody will say, and I think they're earnest with it, differentiation's not so hard. All you have to do is plan one lesson, dumb it down for a few kids, and give the other kids some extra problems, and you're done. Oh. I've seen that many times. That one sends me out of the stratosphere.
Have you ever wished that you could make arts integration a little easier? Maybe have some ready-to-go lesson plans that you know are going to be a surefire winner, or some elements of arts posters to help make that vocabulary just a little easier and something that's a familiar part of your classroom. Or maybe you need some PD hours and you'd love to learn more about arts integration, STEAM, how SEL works with arts integration. Then if this is you, I would love to invite you to join us in the Accelerator. The Accelerator is a one-stop shop for everything arts integration and STEAM. Inside, you're going to find 300 plus lessons that are ready to go, along with student assessments and materials of instruction. Everything is planned, ready, and all you have to do is click open and you've got it. It also has 300 plus resources in your library that you can print and use, everything from planners to posters to checklists to assessments. Everything you could possibly want is available in that library. And speaking of libraries, we have a course library with six online classes, as well as unlimited PD workshops with PD hours that are going to count towards your requirements for salary advancement. So if that sounds like a game changer to you, join us over at artsintegration.com/accelerator. Plans start at just $37 a month.
Another one that I think is really interesting is that differentiation is a set of strategies. This is kind of funny, interesting, not funny, not interesting in working with, and when I say teachers, I mean me too, because I've done everything. Yeah. But you work with folks, and for me, I feel the need to help build some sense of what we're trying to accomplish here, what the philosophy is, where we could go. And I understand where teachers are coming from, but so often it's, don't tell us any background. We don't need that. Just tell us two or three new strategies and we'll go differentiate. And it's kind of like, you know, give me a tool set and I'll go build a house. Right. Yeah. If you don't know anything about architecture, if you don't know anything about physics or tools, maybe not. Maybe the house won't be great. And what I have come to understand over the years is, while strategy, I mean, we have to have things we can use in a class, but they're less important than almost anything else in attending to kids' needs. I mean, there's so many more things that we could do than trying to find yet again another strategy, which frequently does cause us some more work. That's fine, too. I mean, sometimes you have to do that, and you can make it better by co-planning with peers. And, you know, you do the first X, and I'll do the second X, and we'll, you know, we'll figure that out together, keep things and make them better the next year, but not restart. But just that sense that differentiation is a set of strategies, or just show me what it looks like. We had an institute that we did sometimes multiple times a year at the University of Virginia for about 20 years. And one year in the summer, a teacher, always meaning well, that people are there to learn. They didn't have to come far and sit through days of stuff. But she said, I just don't see how you can do what you're talking about in a world language class. Mm-hmm. And I said, and I had just finished showing a world language example, but I said, if the example I just showed you didn't quite make it clear, let me see if I can find an example that deals with specifically the moment in teaching that you're talking about, you know, prepositions or past tense or something. So I went home and scrounged around and asked some friends, and I did find something that had been differentiated by some teachers who were teaching language. And so I brought that back the next day feeling really, really great. And it was in front of the whole group. So I shared it with them and talked a little bit about it and asked her if what I was doing was making sense or if she had other questions. She said, no, she thought it made sense. It helped. But she came back after the session and she said, that was in Spanish too. Show me one in Spanish one. Oh. And of course, what I know then is I'm not communicating well, or I'm trying to meet the need for a strategy when we haven't laid the foundation for it, you know. But but so I think that it's about a set of strategies, and would be helpful if that one went away along with a couple of hundred others.
And, you know, again, what's surprising to me, and maybe not, is that is the parallels, because we literally just finished an online event called Winterfest this past weekend, where we shared some of these strategies for arts integration and as well as laying the groundwork of, here's what this looks like in practice. It's what we're trying to get you to do in at each stage. And feedback very similar. Like, I liked this example, but I didn't quite see how it fit in this in geometry rather than an algebra class. Mm-hmm. Well, so it's very, very similar struggles, mm-hmm. which I think is interesting that different approaches to working with students, different reasons for using those approaches. But when working with educators, it's funny how similar the barriers and the misconceptions can be. And so I think that that might be something to play with for another day, but to think about why is that, that why is it that that we can find those things across approaches that are similar. So, but like I said, probably to save that for another day, I just thought that was interesting. Before well,
let me pop in one thing there, if you're okay with it, because I think I did finally have some insight about that. I mean,
yes.
One writer said the only people who like change is a wet baby. And I think that's true too. And when people start suggesting that we change, it's sort of like, you mean you think I'm not good enough? I thought I was good enough. And mm-hmm. then we get worried about it's too much work, or what are my colleagues going to say if I try this and they don't want to, and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
So I think all of what I call the yes buts, I could do it, but there's this problem, is human. But we had, in the institutes we were doing, we frequently had people who would come for several summers. Usually a leader would bring a slightly different group of teachers back, but sometimes a core group would come back several times. And a couple of times leaders said to us, or just folks that were coming with the group, you know, we can tell this year that we've really made progress because those yes, but questions that everybody else is asking, our teachers have stopped asking them.
Mm.
And so what that means is they've gotten past that to seeing something that's more real, to being able to lose some of the threat,
yeah.
to seeing things that are more positive than just the negatives. The yes buts are universal, and they happen to almost all of us until we can get a little further down the road, I think.
Thank you for that, because that answers that question quite a bit. And it reminds me of the concerns-based adoption model. We use this a bit when we talk about change with teachers and leaders. And it's that first portion where it's concerning around the first bucket is about how does it affect me? And that's what that reminds me of, is that until you can get beyond how does this affect me, you can't change anything else.
No,
about
that's
you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep. Before we go, because I know we've been at this for a while, but I'm so grateful because I'm just learning so much from you today. We talk about the difference between purpose and passion a lot on this show, and kind of thinking about what those two things mean in terms of our careers. And I'm just curious, particularly since this has been such an insightful interview already, if you could describe your career's purpose thus far and your passion, how would you describe those two things?
Well, my purpose, of course, has morphed a little bit over time, because for many years, my purpose was, what can I do to make this a better place for these kids tomorrow? Mm-hmm. My purpose now, I think, is to help teachers think along with me, to help school leaders think along with me, to help parents think along with me, and when I can, to help kids think along with me about what it would make to dream a world and create it. Not some crazy world, you know, that can only happen in science fiction, but to envision a world where human beings can live together and get the most out of themselves and each other. And so I think that's it, especially after the fact that I taught for so long in public school, where the focus every day was the kids. Then to have that second layer of, what do we really know about this stuff? You know, what do we have enough empirical data or experiential data to say, or personal data to say, this is a good step, this is a good way to go. So I think that sense of, in the classroom, of having kids think along with me and watching their thinking and learning from it, and in our profession, trying to help other people think along too. But that's sort of the purpose. My passion really is learning and teaching, and what those do, really almost as metaphors for transforming lives. I mean, what do we do to build a better life at our house, in the swim center that we belong to, the world that we are in? And the idea of dignifying the people in those places and the things we do together. And I'm just a curriculum geek, too. I'm sorry, curriculum and instruction are just fascinating to me. The pieces fit together and the creativity that's in them, or potential creativity that's there, and the endless number of ways you can accomplish the same thing, and the walls you can tear down to make it freeing for a lot of people. It's just, I'm just a curriculum geek at heart, and so I guess that's it.
That's wonderful. I'm right there with you. That's awesome.
Super.
So, where can people find you and learn more about all of the work that you've done so far?
Well, if anybody is real interested in X, which used to be Twitter, right now I'm a little antsy there, but my Twitter handle is at CAT3Y, which is a strange one, but at CAT3Y. Facebook, I just sort of do, you know, geeky kind of personal things there. I haven't ever used that very much for professional purposes. But, and if you look me up on Amazon, you'll find lots of different books that are there. Some of, and some that are on differentiation, have been authored by colleagues or my former students, which are really wonderful. If anybody's really interested, if they'll contact you, I'll be glad to give you a list of some books and other materials on differentiation that are the best I know how to do and the best that some other people know how to do. And I'd be glad to share that, or hit Amazon, or
absolutely
come to, at CAT3Y, and ask me a question there.
Perfect. We'll put all of that in the show notes, and we'll make sure to have that list as the downloadable for this episode so that people
can. Sure, great. We can do that.
All right. Thank you so much for your time today. It has been phenomenal for me. I'm so excited for everybody else to hear this, and I really appreciate it.
And what I want to do now is come join your stuff so I can learn from that perspective. That sounds like a real winner.
It's amazing. Thank you.
Thanks to both of you, you and Jamie.
Thanks for listening to the Artworks for Teachers podcast. This has been a production from the Institute for Arts Integration and STEAM. Be sure to tune in each Thursday for new episodes and head over to artsintegration.com/artworks to download the accompanying resources. And if you know another educator who could use creative inspiration, please share this with them. Together, we can make a difference in education today.